Faith Healing Appliances. Glenn and Tricia spent half an hour waiting for Sally to return to the house, while Earl expounded on how Sally became a pariah after her parents disappeared, and how he was the only person to ever care for her. He chalked it up to some sort of conspiracy theory. He eventually apologized for the threats he made when on their initial contact, then assured them that Sally would most likely be back when she ran out of cigarettes. They left, promising to come back later to get more of the story of the Brown family, at least from Sally's perspective. "I get the impression that Sally Brown is bitter about how things turned out for her," Tricia stated while Glenn navigated down the narrow road. "Doesn't surprise me," she continued. From what I understand, the older someone is when they go into the foster care system, the less likely they are to get adopted and integrated into a family. Sally obviously resents Tim and her sisters. At least Timothy had the happy ending she never had." Tricia gave silent thanksgiving for her own deliverance. Glenn came down to the bottom of the hollow and pulled into a driveway marked by a mailbox with the name Granger on top, with a small sign hung underneath, Appliance Healer. The house at the end of the driveway looked well kept, better than most of the other houses in the area. It was a small ranch-style home, painted red, just like the small barn sitting 50 feet or so off to the side. While they were getting out of their car, a woman came out to greet them. An air of cheer and optimism seems to flow right off her. She appeared to be just past middle age, short, top-heavy. Tricia nudged Glenn as a reminder to keep his mouth shut before he said something which might embarrass all three of them. She had the feeling that he might say something out of turn about the woman being a candidate for breast reduction surgery. "Howdy," the woman greeted them. "You must be the Michaelses." She paused momentarily as if she was trying to remember whether or not her use of the plural was correct in the case. "I'm Kitty. Earl Schultz called on the phone and said you might be here to talk with Fred. He's gone for the moment, but he ought to be back in just a little bit. He's down the road praying over the Templins' oven. Oh, and Earl said for me to tell you that Sally got back in the house. Why don't you come on in and sit for a spell?" Tricia and Glenn followed Kitty inside to find that her living room was just as neat and clean as Sally's living room was dirty and cluttered. There was a cheery fire in the fireplace, the mantel lined with trophies and mementos. "Those are from square dancing," Kitty explained the trophies. "We belong to a group called the Jackson Squares." "Oh, I remember you now," Tricia smiled. "I wrote a story about your group a few years back for the Jackson newspaper." "I kind of thought you looked familiar," Kitty said excitedly. "You was Tricia Knox before, wasn't you? Hey, wait a minute, I got something to show you." Kitty went to a wall by a doorway in the kitchen and pulled a frame from the wall to hand it to Tricia. "You framed it," Tricia exclaimed, quickly rereading the article she wrote. "I am so flattered." "Ain't nothing," Kitty blushed. "Half our membership belongs because of this story. It was good for business, too. Fred's making a good living aside from his retirement by word of mouth, you see." He repairs appliances then," Glenn chimed in. "Well, not so much repairs them as he heals them from what ails them." I don't understand." "Fred goes over to people's houses, prays over their appliances, and heals them, just like you might go to a faith healer to have a bunion disappear or to cure a cancer." Tricia jabbed Glenn again to remind him that we'd be better if he would just roll with the flow. "It works a lot of the time, but when it don't, Fred brings along some spare parts and a toolkit, just in case." "Well, that's wonderful," Tricia gushed. "I'm so happy for you and your husband." Tricia's attention was diverted to a framed photograph and some medals in a case over in another corner of the living room. The photograph showed a half dozen young men dressed in camouflage posing in front of a tank dated Christmas 1971. She looked over the medals in the case, the only one she recognized as a Purple Heart. It wasn't long before Fred Granger made his appearance. He came in, put his jacket on a hook near the door, then greeted his wife and the two visitors. He wasn't a large man, standing just over 5.5 feet, medium build, thinning hair and having the same ebullient bearing as his wife. Time had been kind to him. "You're a fellow on the radio," Fred stated matter-of-fact when he was introduced to Glenn. "I've been meaning to come up to talk with you ever since Zeke passed, but I've been really busy here." "Well, you're really welcome any time, Mr. Granger. There's no invitation is necessary." So, what brings you and Miss Knox over to our neck of the woods?" "Well, we've been visiting the Sally Brown up the holler," Tricia explained. "I met her yesterday and ran into someone claiming to be one of her brothers earlier today. I'm just doing a follow-up." "Well, that must have been Tim you saw. I had no idea he was still around," Fred stated. "Him and his sister Rose, I think it was, were the only family members untouched by what happened. David, the oldest, died in a car wreck. Jimmy's in jail for killing the bank guard, and the other one, Evan, I think his name was, hanged himself a while back, so I hear." Fred paused for a few moments before mentioning something about having to talk to Glenn in private. They left quietly while Tricia and Kitty resumed their talk about the Jackson Squares. After the men left the house, Kitty huddled with Tricia and changed the subject. "She's known as Crazy Sally, you know," Kitty told her guest. "Well, I get the impression that she might be a few French fries short of a Happy Meal," Tricia replied. "Or a bubble or two off, Plum." The women laughed. "I know for a fact that Fred and Sally's older brother, Dave, I think his name was, were partly responsible for her being crazy." "Well, how's that?" Kitty drew Tricia in even closer, keeping an eye out on the door. "When I first started seeing Fred, I made him promise me that he'd never tell me a lie. He had this reputation, you see, as being a liar. Before we had relations the first time, I asked him if he'd ever been with another woman. Now, I expected him to tell me he'd been to a whorehouse when he was in Vietnam, and he told me that he did. What I didn't expect to hear from him was that him and Sally Brown had regular relations for a while before her mom and pa went away in the fall of 67. He said that they were kids, that no one ever thought anything about it. Most girls in around these hills ain't virgins past the age of 15 anyhow, especially if they have brothers. Anyway, Fred told me about once a week him and Sally would sneak out of their houses in the wee hours of the morning, do the dirty deed, then sneak back home with no one none the wiser." "Well, I take it that he lived a little closer to her place than you do now. Her place is a good 3 miles up the hollow from here," Tricia pointed out. "Fred's folks had a place across the hollow, maybe 50 yards from the Brown's front door. Fred and me moved here from Jackson about 10 years ago. The old place where Fred was raised was torn down by then." Tricia thanked Kitty for the clarification. "At any rate, he told me he met Sally on the morning that the parents were said to have disappeared. He said that about the time they finished, they heard a car drive up, sheriff's car. He said a man went and knocked on the door, and the next thing he saw was a man and some kid dragging Mrs. Brown out to his car. After they left, Fred said that him and Sally put on the clothes, snuck out of the barn, and went to where he could have a better lookout without being seen. He said that him and Sally watched Sally's pa come out the other side of the house, peeking around to see if the car had left. Next thing they knew, Sally's pa bolted out to the road, run toward the main highway. They thought about following him, but Fred said that him and Sally needed to get back to their houses before anyone found out they was gone. He told me that later on that day when it come up the Browns were missing, he thought about saying something to David Brown, Sally's older brother, about what he saw, but he thought the better of it. He figured he'd be in trouble twice, once from his pappy for being out of the house so early in the morning, and once by the law for what him and Sally had been doing up in the hayloft when they was out of the house that early in the morning." "You said the father ran down the hollow after the police car?" Tricia asked. "Well, that's what Fred told me. He said they started the search the next day, going up the holler and over Rattlesnake Ridge and found nothing. They searched the path to Pearl, then went out to two more counties and still found nothing. The searching stopped at about the same time the bridge collapsed at Point Pleasant. He was going to say something, but by that time Dave was dead." "Well, I saw David Brown's marker up at the cemetery yesterday. I tried asking Sally what happened to her brother when we were up at her house just a bit ago, but I couldn't find the right time to ask her." Well, Fred told me that David took his daddy's car and headed toward Kentucky around Thanksgiving. Almost made it until he got nailed by a semi, at least that's what the sheriff said happened. No one ever saw the car and never did hear about the accident except to say that it happened. Dave was killed, though. He was buried up to Possum Hollow Cemetery. According to Fred, it was probably the best thing ever happened to him. They sat still for a moment. A million questions seemed to be racing through Trisha's mind. The story that Kitty told her, secondhand, was just enough different than the stories she'd heard from Lizzie Elston and from Sally Brown herself. There was some common thread, but there are big differences. She decided to take her own advice and leave well enough alone until she had a chance to talk to Glenn to see maybe if Fred had told her the same story that Kitty had told her. Less than 2 years after the Browns disappeared, Fred got drafted and was sent overseas, continued Kitty. He came back, got a job at the cabinet factory in Jackson, and met me. We've been married over 35 years last June, and he never, ever told me a lie, not even a little white one. And he said nothing to anyone other than you about what happened that day up in Possum Hollow? Not a word, Kitty confirmed, although he's been given some thought to saying something because of the Worry Girl and the other two that are reported missing from here in Fuller County. I think that Hoke's been put a bug in his ear. Who's Hoke? Trisha asked. Hoke's a caller for our club. He seems to know everything that goes on around this neck of the woods. Before Kitty could say anything else, the men came back in the front door. You girls had a good talk? Fred asked almost as soon as he hit the threshold. Well, I was telling Miss Trisha here about the dance down to Jackson tonight, she beamed. You think maybe Mr. Glenn and Miss Trisha would like to come along? We'd be delighted, Trisha accepted before Glenn could object. We'd need to change our clothes and get him something to bring to the carry-in, but sure, it'll be fun. She looked over at Glenn to remind him that he needed to roll with the flow. Arrangements were made for the two couples to meet in Jackson at 6. Glenn and Trisha got back in his car to head off to purchase the appropriate costumes. Why? He asked almost as soon as he left the driveway. I'd like to talk to their club caller, someone Kitty called Hoke. Besides, I think it'll be fun. Well, I've never done this before. Just roll with the flow. Besides, I need to talk with you about what Kitty told me while you two were in the barn. Did it have something to do with an early morning rendezvous Fred had with Sally Brown on the morning her parents were said to have walked out the back door, never to be seen again? Exactly. I'm hoping you heard the same story. Trisha repeated the story she heard from Kitty. Glenn confirmed that it was the same story Fred had told him when they went out to the barn. Fred said that he told the sheriff that he saw Nadine Brown being taken away by one of his deputies, Glenn stated. The sheriff at the time just snorted at him and said, "Sure you did." He didn't believe Fred because he was known at the time as being one of the biggest liars in the county. No one would believe him except for David Brown. Well, Kitty said something about David being killed in an accident around Thanksgiving. Fred told me the same thing. Trisha and Glenn just shook their heads. The stories of Fred and Kitty seemed to be consistent with each other. Sally, on the other hand, told me that when I met her, that her parents went out the back door to go hunting ginseng, which meshes with the official version I heard from Lizzie, Trisha remarked. Could there be some sort of a cover-up going on? That's possible, but I'm not sure what to think. Fred admitted to me that he was a liar at one time, worse even than Ollie Davidson over to Jumpstart. Well, Kitty told me the same thing about Fred being a liar, but she seems satisfied that he's telling the truth these days. Did Kitty mention the name Quentin Russell? No, but Lizzie Elston mentioned the name. So did Roy. They think that Quentin Russell was a hitman for the sheriff at the time, and someone named Lou Gilbert. They were in cahoots in some sort of a criminal enterprise. Fred mentioned there might have been a boy involved. So did Kitty. To that point, both of their stories agree. If there was a boy involved, he could have seen Quentin Russell's son. Or could have been Quentin Russell's son. Well, what do we know about Quentin Russell? Glenn pointed out. Other than a name and a reputation, nothing, she answered. They drove in silence for a short time. Fred mentioned something about the Ross brothers. As in Sheriff Ross? As in Sheriff Ross. There is more than just one of them, and they were tied in with Quentin Russell and this Lou Gilbert. Fred made it sound like they were running the county. More work from other, Tricia laughed. I'll see what I can find out Monday morning. You may want to talk with Fred some more, too, Glenn suggested. This Ross brothers sounded to me as much of a gang as it was anything relational. He told me he might have joined himself if he hadn't been called up in the draft. Glenn parked a car in front of a small western wear shop, which Fred and Kitty suggested as being a good place to purchase clothing for the dance. You talk to him. What do you think about Fred's story? She asked before they got out of the car. Did he see something no one else admits had to having seen, or is he just making something up to please his audience? It's more likely a bit of both, Glenn replied. He probably saw something, but that was, what, 45 years ago? Suppose you're right, she told him when they entered the shop. I'll see what I can find out when I talk with Roy.